All right, so to discuss another category of a violation that does not, of necessity, carry along with it lashes is what we call, either in the language of the Mishnah, lav sheyesh bo aseh. We started talking about this yesterday, a prohibition which is attached to a positive commandment. I'll give two examples in just a moment. Or sometimes called, more in the language of the Gemara, as we call Lishna derabanan, lav hanitak la'aseh. So, you know, the Torah says in Sefer Dvarim in Parashat Ki Tetzeh, lo tikach ha'em al habanim, that if you're going to take the chicks or the eggs, you shall not take it with the mother bird around. And there's this big debate, what's the reason for all of this? The Gemara says that somebody who says that this is because God is being compassionate on animals, which certainly seems like the simple interpretation, Mishaskin or so, that we should silence such a person. And the question is why? You know, two different opinions in the Gemara. One of them is why did God only have compassion on the mother bird? Maybe God should have compassion on the mother armadillo. You know, what's this special attention to the birds that God is paying? The other attention is Osa midosav shel Kadosh Baruch Hu rachamim ve'enan el gzeros, that this presents God's will somehow is shaped by mercy, even though of course we call him kel rachum v'chanun, etc. Ve'enan el gzeros, and they're really only decrees. So the truth of the matter is that the Rambam weighs in on this subject, and he says, yeah, that's one opinion in the Gemara, but we reject that. The truth is that we do assume that there are reasons for all commandments, not just the ones that are mishpatim, as we call them, completely rational in nature, but even the chukim, other things that don't necessarily have an obvious reason, maybe something like shatnez or kashrus, paraduma, zos chukas haTorah, even if it's inscrutable to us, we assume that God isn't willing things for arbitrary reasons. The Ramban has a very lengthy essay where he quotes the view of the Rambam on this topic, the Mor Nevuchim, and he fundamentally agrees, and he's a very, vociferous about this point, that it is absolutely the case that every reason and every mitzvah in the Torah has a reason, and if we only understood it well enough, we would understand the reasons for everything, and that's part of, I guess, the impetus of Talmud Torah. And the Ramban says something very clearly. He says, you know, what the Gemara meant is, Osa midosav shel Kadosh Baruch Hu rachamim ve'enan el gzeros, what that really means is that God's not doing this for himself, he's doing it for us. So it's not that it was, you know, God's compassion qua God, but God wanted to shape us to be more compassionate individuals, and that the Torah wasn't given for God's sake, but it was given for man's sake, so that we could improve our actions, and maybe even more important than our actions, something the Ramban is constantly talking about, Tamim tia im Hashem Elokecha v'asisa yasher v'atov kedoshim tiyu, that our personalities should become like entirely refined. So the reason I got onto this whole little tangent about shaleach teshalach esaim, that you should send the mother bird away, is like, what's the relationship between the two? If you already took the eggs with the mother there, can you correct this? So the normative position, as we'll see in a second, is yes, indeed, it's a lav, lo sikachem al abanim, and you violated that, but you're not going to get lashes because you can correct it doing this mitzvah saseh by sending the mother bird away. That's the normative position. We'll see that there's a minority view, the view of Rabbi Yehuda, who says, no, you already violated at that point. You know, the mother was already there to witness everything that's going on, so there's no ability to, at this point, do shaleach to shalach es ha'em. But there's another example that we might bring. We know that if you make a loan to somebody and it's a collateralized loan because the person doesn't have, let's say, the greatest credit on planet Earth, the Torah says that you're supposed to respect a certain dignity of the individual who owes you money, if you're going to seize the collateral, then one should not invade the private space of the individual. You always have to respect people's domestic space. So, lo tavo al beito, lavot et ha'avot. So one isn't supposed to enter into that private residential space so that one can protect the dignity of the individual involved. But if indeed a person did take the avot, did take the collateral, entered into the household, the Torah says that one can easily give it back to the person. So once again, that's another example of a lav hanitak la'aseh, and for that there would not be any lashes. So let's read it inside and then maybe offer a thought, sort of as we were discussing last night, in the context of a lav that has an affiliated action along with it. So the Mishnah says as follows, Hanotel Eim al Abanim, if the mother bird is there when the children are being taken, Rabbi Yehuda Omer Loka, one gets lashes, Ve'eno Mishaleach. At this point, one cannot fulfill the mitzvah of Shaleach to Shalach HaSa'im. V'chachamim Omer Mishaleach Ve'ein oloka. The rabbis say that you can send the mother bird away and therefore escape the lashes. Now, it's important to formulate it just that way, to escape the lashes, because let's say, you know, God forbid, just as one is about to send the mother bird away, the mother bird, you know, something happens to her. You're not able to send her away anymore. The mother bird passes away, whatever it is. So then one wouldn't be able to fulfill the mitzvah. One wouldn't have fulfilled the mitzvah d'aseh. And then retroactively, one would be subject to lashes because one did not correct the lav with the aseh. One did not reverse the prohibition, so to speak, with the positive commandment. Zeh haklal, this is the general principle at work in the mitzvah. Excuse me. Kol mitzvah lo saseh sheyesh ba kum aseh. Any prohibition that's attached to a mitzvah saseh, ein chayavin aleha. One cannot be subject to lashes for it. And again, the other example is lo savol beso lavot avoto, and then hashev tashiv lo es haavot, to return the collateral before nightfall. So the big question, I guess, here, and this is where I think the conceptual action is at, is like, well, why should this be the case? You know, we discussed this yesterday. Why would it be that the halacha would draw a line and say, you know, a prohibition that's affiliated with an action, that we're going to look at it differently than a prohibition that's not affiliated with any action whatsoever, that's completely passive in nature. And so Sandy and I had a nice discussion about that. You know, what is exactly the difference? And maybe doing something in an active way is a greater rebellion, even if, you know, like, you know, give another example, apropos our discussion last night, one's parent, you know, tells one to clean up the room, so one just, you know, lies on the bed and doesn't do it, that's bad enough, you know, but it's a kind of like, you know, civil disobedience, or maybe not so civil, but a passive form of resistance, let's say. You know, but if one would then get up and, you know, take all of the clothes from the closet that were actually in place, the two articles of clothing that were actually, you know, hanging up, and, you know, throw them on the ground and dump the mattress on the floor, I think we would say that was, you know, a greater act of defiance, a greater act of rebellion. So that was the case that I was trying to make to Sandy last night. So, you know, apropos that, you know, conceptualization, anybody want to make an argument here? Why would it be that a lav which is attached to an aseh, to a mitzvah aseh, would not be subject to lashes, unless, of course, one wasn't able, as we said, to fill the mitzvah aseh? One entered the person's home to take the collateral and did not return it to the person. What's the underlying reason? I mean, we did discuss tonight, you know, we should assume that there are reasons for things. So what would the rationale be? You know, during my daytime hours, I can always promise extra credit. You know, I have fewer tools here. So I think, Sandy, go ahead. Okay. So I think that what it has to do with is as follows. You know, I think the basic idea of a lav hanitak la'aseh is that one hasn't fully committed the prohibition as long as the aseh, as long as the positive commandment is still on the table. So you really shouldn't have taken the eggs when the mother bird was around. But if you can still somehow send the mother bird away, then it's almost as if, right, like the check hasn't cleared yet, right? It's still hanging a little bit in the balance. One really shouldn't have entered the person's home to take the collateral. But if you can give it back to the person, right, it doesn't like erase the past, but we sort of look at it in its totality. We look at not, you know, one discrete lav and then, you know, 6 hours later, you know, in aseh that has no relationship between the two. But as we say, it's a lav hanitak la'aseh, that they're attached together. So we evaluate, you know, the total action, you know, in one collaborative unit. And if we look at it in that holistic way, I think that you're not really evaluating a lav that took place that was then followed by an aseh, but a lav sheish bo aseh. That there really, you know, is a continuum here. And if you look at it in that way, in that kind of a holistic way, that takes a little bit of the sting off, you know, that which was done. Now, sometimes, of course, you know, you lose the opportunity to do the mitzvah saseh. As I said, like in the example of taking the eggs when the mother bird is still there, and then, you know, you want to send away the mother bird, but you're not able to do so because, you know, the mother bird, something happens, and you're not able to do it. Somebody steals it from you, or, you know, the mother bird flies away on its own, or whatever it is. So, you know, then one missed that opportunity, and then all one is left with is a lav. But I think it's just a way of keeping the question open for a certain period of time. And we're only prepared to give somebody lashes if we can say dispositively, you know, they violated this, and, you know, the book is closed, and then we move forward with the lashes. But I think this is another example of where we can hopefully discern an underlying rationale to why the Torah would not have prescribed lashes in a case where the prohibition is still very much sort of in play due to its attachment to the a possibly reparative positive commitment. Lav hanitak la'aseh. Okay, just.